Good evening, everybody. Call to order the February 23rd, 2015 board meeting. Please rise, face the flag, and pledge allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Terrific. Roll call, please.
Mr. Bochinski?
Here.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Alger? Mrs. Nelson?
Here.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mr. Kenworth?
Here. All right, good evening. Public participation time. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form, and limit their comments to 3 minutes or less. If your comments have substantially been reflected in others, we would ask in the interest of time that you please forego making them and that you provide the board with any copies of written material that you may have. Personal complaints and criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Also, profanity, interruption, and or other interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate District 41 staff representative for a response, if a response is warranted. Is there anyone present that would like to address the board at this time?
Anthony Svach.
Good evening. My name is Tony Svach. I'm a father of three daughters who all gone to church at school, and one goes to West as a freshman, one's at Hadley, and one's in first grade now, and they've just had an excellent experience. And I want to thank, you know, Mr. Busfitz and Dr. Gordon and the board for just providing the environment they've enjoyed over these 10 years. It's been really something special, and it's the culture and the caring of the teacher, the Churchill, that they've really enjoyed. The one challenge we've had since we've been here the last 10 years is the facilities that we educate our children in. And one of those challenges, obviously, is the portables that we have there. And it's something where, over time, I've heard different things about the kids, where they had to leave to go to the washroom, they had to leave to go to the library. And then I brought up my daughter to dinner, and they said, well, Dad, that's if you don't get stuck outside. Sometimes when you get the one car, it doesn't get you back in. You have to knock on the door, and someone has to hear you and come out and do that. And then one time we didn't have water, and then one time it was too cold and we had to come in. And so I think in 2007 and 2008, we all agreed that we were in a fiscal situation where that wasn't something we could address. And I accepted that and understood it would do the best of what we could. But I think right now we're in a position where we can provide a facility for our children that will provide the educational environment that their teachers can really maximize. And so I think we have a responsibility as stewards of our children's education going forward to make this decision to provide this environment today rather than have to wait for anything else. I think every day we have our kids in that facility is a day where they're not getting the optimal education, where teachers really care to provide that education. So I really appreciate the fact that this is up for a vote tonight, and I really hope that you support this because it'll make a big difference in our children's lives and the legacy we leave for the children at Churchill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jeff Cooper.
Mr. Cooper.
Thank you. I've got 4 points here tonight. First is, at the last board meeting we were going forward with, we would probably go referendum in March of 2016. And I was told students that, I guess, November of 2016 supposedly was not an opportunity to do that or something else. With us, we have a conversation with the other committee, but I want to make sure the public that March of 2016, there's no reason to get off a referendum. It's not a fair thing to do because it is a much more difficult election than March of 2016. So hopefully we have that and also reference to referendum. It took me, I don't know how many weeks to get the answers from our administration, and when I finally did get the answers last week from our board, it's incredulous that you feel that the people that live around Spalding aren't entitled to the same things parents get and constituents in their schools. I heard at the last meeting about Mr. Richards, he would have been able to get some parents from Churchill for the solution there. If people who live around Spalding don't have kids in their system, they're probably not in their emails. And to expect that they somehow magically can figure out when the meetings are, it ruins that. It's not the way you need to reach out to the people that you want to be affected with this conversation. You need to get conversations with them and try to stop their lives as soon as possible and keep them in the way. It's the only thing you need to do. Third, I need to know, March 7th, there is a coffee run. Is that a District 41 event, or is that a campaign?
March 7th?
March 7th.
Board coffee and conversation.
Oh, coffee with the cops thing.
And what I can't figure is this, how somebody, I mean, I should have brought this up probably months ago when I first saw this coming up, how we can have a candidate who's an incumbent on the board at a board function like this and not expect that it's going to become a campaign event. So I think there's only two things that we can do here. First, if you want to keep the event, I think you need to change one of the people who's hosting it. Or you need to open the event so that all candidates that are running for this April's election are at this event and are able to go ahead and keep it at the neutral of the campaign. Otherwise, the blurred line between what's supposedly a district event and someone's idea of trying to get a new event done with some of the other people that are running, I don't see that as being something that you want to project out of your something that's going to be.
Okay.
And
thank you.
On that, we still have time here.
No, you don't.
We'll go with the three points.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Kristen Travers. Good evening. My name is Kristen Travers, and I've been a Churchill parent for 10 years. I feel it is imperative that Churchill's remaining portable be removed as soon as possible. On the extreme cold day last Thursday, I was working in the library when the heating system was not working correctly in one of our portables. Wind chill was between 20 and 30 degrees below zero. 20 minutes before students were to arrive, it was determined it could not be repaired in time and the students would have to be moved inside. Within those 20 minutes, teachers had to formulate new plans for the entire day, gather and transport necessary materials for teaching 20-plus students without having access to their smart boards, computers, or their students' personal supplies. Two classrooms were relocated to the multipurpose room. The other two moved to the library. This last-minute switch caused multiple issues for many people. Our custodian had to stop his usual morning duties to pull down lunchroom tables and benches for almost 50 students in the multipurpose room. The kindergarten teacher had to change his plans because he now had to pull three PE classrooms in their classroom. The flex teacher had planned to use the smart board for her 30-minute Spanish lesson, so she had to change her plans as well. The library was already set up for first-grade PBL presentations, so those two classrooms had to crowd around the remaining tables, and the teachers had to keep them quiet so the first graders could be heard. Meanwhile, all of the level three classes were continually coming and going all morning around the perimeter of the library, heading to music, art, and gym. Definitely not a conducive environment for learning. Fortunately, the repairmen were able to fix it right before lunch so they could move back into their classrooms. Having had portables for 11 years, students have had to be relocated several times. Last year, we had a high wind day, and both portables, nearly 200 students, had to be brought into the school all day. Our principal is creative, but I have no idea where he put those children. Our staff is amazing. They don't complain. They do the best they can in their given situations. Daily life in these portables is less than ideal. Even when the heat is working, it's inconsistent. Students and teachers wear their coats throughout the day. Students travel in and out of the building during thunderstorms. Years ago, students had to leave their portables and head inside during a microburst. The amount of space per student is almost limited to their desk area. Teachers try to have gathering space on the floor, but not everybody can fit. They're continually traveling in and out of the building unsupervised for bathroom, ESL, resource services, the nurse, and the library. We were the first school to get portables 11 years ago, and we are the last school to get rid of them. It is time to eliminate them now. It should be the top priority. I applaud the administration and the board who are finally making this a reality. Even with a yes vote tonight, it will still be approximately another year before our students are safely under one roof. I cannot imagine why anybody would not support this vote tonight and get our students out of those trailers. What is more pressing than our students' safety? Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
So I just want to clear up something that Mr. Cooper brought up, and we emailed him this information. A number of years ago, the Illinois General Assembly changed the regular scheduled election dates by deleting the November election in odd number years. Permitted election dates are set forth in Article 2A of the Election Code. Election Code Section 2A-1A provides as follows. No public question may be submitted to any voters in the state except pursuant to this code. Election Code Section 2A-1B provides as follows. All elections in the state shall be held in accordance with this consolidated election schedule of elections established in Section 2A-1.1 and 2A-1.2. Neither Section 2A-1.1 nor 2A-1.2 allows for a November election in odd number years. This is not something the district has created. This is something the state has created. We tried to follow the state regulations and guidelines that have been set forth by them to us. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, we have more.
Cindy Rojas.
What is happening with multi-aids for next year. I know that I'm not clear on that point. Personally, it has not been a good experience for my girls. I love their teachers. I'm excited for all the teachers that they've had at Lincoln. I think they're superb, and I can't imagine how they're doing. I know they get pulled out a lot to be able to get training that they need, and even then, I don't feel it's been enough. We've had a lot of subs. And I have a fifth grader, thank God, that already went through that. It was not a good experience for her. And even though she did have great teachers, I'm glad she's going into Hadley and that's done. But I have a third grader that I'm very concerned about, especially with the STEAM situation. I know that the literacy this year, they did literacy multi-age and STEAM was separate. So I just wanted to
thank you.
Sarah McCall.
I'm speaking to you tonight about multi-age. I'm asking that you permanently delay moving forward with the multi-age for both literacy and STEAM as level two. I have seen firsthand how negatively this has impacted my son. It was a negative impact on my daughter in fifth grade, but my son in second grade. I cannot express to you how poorly this has gone for him. I have two children who went through Lincoln up until fifth grade for my daughter and my son the whole way through with exemplary experiences of Lincoln. And my son was just so stressed out, he's developed a tick. He begged me not to go to school every day. In second graders should love school. They should want to go to school. They should love everything about school in second grade. And he is so stressed out. I don't even know how to explain this to you. This is such a negative experience, having two teachers, having to figure out what he's doing every day. This is such a negative experience for him. I beg you to please not move forward with the multi-age for STEAM or literacy for level two. And please, I personally, I'm against even having two teachers, but if you're going to leave it at that, please do not do multi-age. Leave it the way it is. Thank you.
Thank you.
Erin Dieter.
I'm here because I also took up multi-age. I have a son who's down to sixth grade. I have a fourth grade daughter and a second grade daughter. And I also have two gardeners. So lots of kids going through the system. And I would just like to say, first of all, that I'm not sure that this is even going to be addressed tonight fully because there wasn't an attachment on the agenda. But and it's part of the post-education of that. So I just want to bring this up now and say that there are still so many teacher concerns that multi-age for level 2, 3 is not appropriate. And I would just like to know what the district has done to address that. I would like to know what's been done regarding the survey that was taken last year. I don't know that there's been much follow-up, and I know that potentially that's a funding issue. I guess I question the fact that we can't spend funding to see whether or not this is an appropriate something that we should be doing. I wonder if it's going to be a simple survey, something that we're taking this for kindergarten. I know that the five essential surveys have been completed, but that does not cover the detail of all the ways that we're trying to school in our district. And I would just be curious to know, with all of the utility sessions, I understand that appears to be being favored at this point, is the early childhood center, which takes the kindergarten out of the model of multiple kindergarten surgery. So I guess I just question whether multiple is even a priority in the district anymore. And if it's not a priority anymore, I guess I just wonder why we're going to continue moving forward with multiple in the district. And I just really question whether or not the results that are showing that this is really effective for level three, and again, addressing those concerns for level three. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Okay, presentations. BAM, Become Amazing Men event.
Hilary Schumate is going to do a brief presentation, kind of up here-ish.
Okay.
It's an odd. This will be our last evening for a while at Hadley, so we're still trying to figure out how to lay it out. That would be beautiful. So it's yours to talk about BAM.
Okay, well, thank you so much for letting me be here today. Erica had the pleasure of, having Erica at BAM on Saturday. So we have had powerful, outstanding women at Hadley Junior High, sponsored by the Hadley PTA, which is to empower young women at Hadley to be their outstanding selves. And so that has been such a success over the last 3 years that we decided we would love to do a program for boys. And it was really cute because I used to go to the classrooms and ask, you know, try to promote POW, and the boys always said, well, what about us? We want a POM. So rather than calling it POM, we came up with Becoming Amazing Men. And so we had our first BAM event on Saturday, and we were thrilled with the results. We had over 150 participants. So I did some math. We did have a survey at the end, and we had about 45 mentors, 36 or so sixth graders filled out surveys, and then seventh grade had the next level of participation, followed by eighth at the least amount of students. But we were really happy to have 150 people. We had our keynote speaker was a USA Today writer, Kevin Allen, and he is a National Hockey Hall of Famer honorary guy. I'm not a sports girl. So he
good.
Did a presentation for us, and it was all about, you know, just kind of being your best self, empowering yourself as a leader, and he gave them about 10 tips to be amazing. And then the participants had a choice of two breakout slots, with about five options in each, including improv, school of rock, strength, basketball, and a team building exercise. So they got to choose, and then they had a session, two sessions total. And then we ended the day with pizza and raffles at the end. And I don't know if it was our amazing program that got all the kids or that we had a hockey stick from the Blackhawks autographed by every single Blackhawks player.
Wow.
So that was quite a draw. But we had amazing support from the community. Again, Hadley PTA sponsored that. Kristen Massey was in charge of BAM and did a really great job kind of organizing that, involving Glenbard West. We had a ton of boys helping us. And it was just a really great thing. I did put a PowerPoint together of pictures. Sorry, Nancy, I didn't do it, so it rotated. So you have this, and I'll share that with you. But you can see the agenda and some pictures. I've already gotten emails from people.
Can we slide through? Okay.
Yeah.
There it goes.
Kind of how great it was. And so we also did a video as this is talking. I went around and interviewed the Hadley men, and I asked them about what does it mean to be a man. And they said really great answers. And we showed that throughout the week as kind of a promo, and then we opened our day with that. Yeah, we had comedy sports here. Oh, Frank T. led a session with technology, and they were able to make T-shirts and videos, and they had a lot of fun working with that. We also had a Latino group come in, and they're working on a mentoring program, and they targeted some boys that they really thought, you know, could be a great mentor. And they, Gabby Hernandez went and called all the people, and they did get a good response for that, too. So that was, so it was
which is a really great success. And I just want to share that with you and thank the PTA because they have been supporting us for now 4 years with these programs. And we're meeting soon to kind of talk about how we can grow this program, especially, you know, eighth grade is the hardest group to reach. So we don't know if anything will get them here on a Saturday morning or if it's just we're not offering the right thing for them on a Saturday morning. So it was really cute. I mean, I saw a grandfather and a son. They're in this strength training. We had this CrossFit guy. The guys were like, so they were just having so much fun. They did wheelbarrow races. They played a little dodgeball. So it was just really fun to see the boys and the dads together like that. So thank you.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Any questions?
Any questions for me?
Just the only thing I would say is I was able to come over for the first hour and a half or so, and the keynote speaker was really interesting, and the people who had questions were the fathers. So they were in here, and we had to bring extra chairs in, which was, you know, wonderful. But what was neat about it, and I was saying to Hillary, too, is that, and Brian Liedemann, one of the other teachers who was here, is that because the dads got into it and asked questions, I think that the reverb from that, well, they'll go home and talk about it more, and so then the day is discussed, and that was really the goal. How do you keep this conversation going about, you know, being together and, you know, doing something outside of, you know, traditional sports or that type of thing? So it just was a really well-planned thing.
And that was Nate Brown's cousin. And we had lots of people at Hadley. Even if they couldn't come, we had teachers donate for the raffle. Brian Liedemann helped organize it. Tim Loughran did a session. Frank Tomskevich did a session. And a lot of them just emailed home or called home, and that was a big support. Mr. Dively donated prizes. So everybody, even if they couldn't be there, I think they're really supportive of the event. So it's great. So thank you.
As a part of the program, do the kids come with their father? Is that a part of the program, or can they just come if they want to show up?
We did have a boy come, and the teacher had really wanted this boy to come, and he did not have a male figure in his life. So he came, and we partnered him up with another family. And even for Pal, we had sisters, aunts.
Yeah.
We had older brothers here yesterday. We just had male figures. And a couple boys brought their moms. And they were really, you know, they sat and just kind of watched and participated. And a mom and a son were working together in Frank's session. So we weren't definitely going to turn anybody away. But that was the idea, that they could really bond. And especially, you know, I don't have children, but having taught junior high, you see them pull away from their parents more and more. And
no.
So I just, how was school? Fine. What'd you do? Nothing. You know, you never have that. So the biggest comments that we get with the surveys for POW and for BAM were just they love spending time with their kids and having a conversation. And my favorite comment of a boy, he said, it was really fun to hang out with my dad. Yeah.
I think it's great. I'm glad that, and thank you for the PTA for doing this, but you know, we used to have a program called Watchdogs, which was really trying to get fathers engaged in the kids' education because we found that there weren't really a lot of fathers in the buildings. And there's research that says it's good to get dad involved. Maybe the kids don't like that, but I think this is good because it not only gets them involved, but it gets them involved in the conversation. Whereas, you know, the other program was a good program, and I'm sorry we kind of lost it, but it was more kind of observing the day of the child, where this is really conversational and getting people to work together, especially with that. So I appreciate that.
That's really good. Thank you so much.
Hillary, thank you so much for
thank
making
you.
A difference in our district. Absolutely amazing. What you and the PTA and everybody else.
PTA too.
Way to go. Huge kudos. Nice
thank
job.
You.
Thank you for being here.
Okay, we have a construction update next.
Jack. To get a fill out, BAM. Do you have any cool acronym or anything?
There's no way to follow that.
No.
So
okay.
Well, as you know, construction is a series of peaks and valleys, and we're a little bit of a valley right now because of the weather. But John and his crew have continued to keep progress moving at Forest Glen as available in coordination with the school calendar and the daily schedule of activities there. Churchill's really right now just kind of preparing for the spring startup once the weather breaks. So that's really what's going on. We've had some punch list activity wrapping up Lincoln and Franklin. Activities there as it allows, and there'll be more of that in the spring once the weather breaks to wrap up the outside work. So that's really what's happening right now, and will continue to happen over the next 30 days. Hopefully we'll get a little weather break and we can jump back under the roof at Forest Glen and get work started in earnest at Churchill.
I'm happy to answer any questions you can have.
Anybody have any questions?
provided an updated schedule and budget. Schedule still, is occupying facilities over the summer in time to start school up there in August. It's going to be, it's the way the schedule works out. It'll be a little bit more to push it Churchill and Forest Glen, but we feel confident that we're going to be able to make that.
Great. Any
just,
questions?
Just one general question. I think we asked it before, but I always keep asking it. With the weather the way it is for Churchill, and remaining on schedule, so no premium time is necessary.
There has been an allocation budgeted in the Churchill project to utilize premium time as necessary. So we'll do that the same way we did with Lincoln and Franklin, is on a case by case basis.
Right, understood.
Okay.
But I'd like it to be zero, of course.
Sure.
So if it's zero and it remain on the schedule, when do you believe, what your best guess here, would we need to really start off full? April 1st, April 15th?
Well, actually, the update that I gave you, the allotment of loss days is used up.
Is used up. So we're starting March 1st. We're eating into your schedule.
So what we, as we talked about, I guess last time, and then also again this time, anticipating, what we need to do now first is to focus on sequencing and going faster with the trade we have before we start to talk about if it's a necessary change of premium time going forward. So we won't, first off, we need the weather to break so we can start to actually make some progress.
Mm-hmm.
And we won't, and then at that point, we'll be able to reevaluate the schedule in total. And we won't start to most likely deal with the question of premium time probably until, May or June at the earliest for the work at Churchill. I wouldn't want to, include it and or rely on it at this point.
Understood. And the resequencing, as we've used up those allocated weather days, have you started thinking about the resequencing and talking to the subs?
We have.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anything else? Okay, for the record, does Dean have to announce himself? Or?
No, I made him.
You made a note? Okay, great. Okay. At 7:55. Thank you. Welcome.
And he looks really good.
Yes, he does.
All right. No other questions? Academic update. Karen.
So tonight, we're actually going to share what we want to do is kind of highlight the recent data, but we're actually going to present it in a different way. And then following this, we'll hear a little bit about how our kids do at best. So I'm going to start with what we refer to as the box and whiskers plot. So this was kind of shared with us this fall of ad teams, and it was kind of an interesting way of looking at our data. And so we're going to present it in this format, and hopefully we'll be returning in probably June to go to principals to kind of highlight their data and stuff. So I'm going to try the pointer, but remember how challenged I was. So,
Karen, can you just speak up a little bit? There's a
problem
over here.
Okay, sorry. So, with the box and whiskers plot, I'm going to kind of talk through what you see here. So, what you do by grade level is you take all of the kids' RIT scores, math reports in RIT, and you look for that median score, which is right here, which is that score, just as a reminder, that's in the middle. And then you take these quartiles, so you've got the 25th percentile here, and then the 75th percentile there. So you're going to see that in every box. And 50% of the kids kind of fall within that box. The remaining kids fall between this minimum line and that maximum line, and that is calculated at 1.5 times the size of the box.
Okay.
So that's really your range of scores. However, you'll see these little dots periodically. Those are what we call outliers,
mm-hmm.
and those are individual students. So their scores are falling either above or below that kind of range, kind of greater than that 1.5 times. So you'll see kind of that fall, winter, spring of last year, it's by cohort, and fall and winter this year. So when it's side by side, you kind of do that comparison of the data sets. And just as I mentioned, that's a single student at that site. So Mike, I'm going to have you prepare that.
To Karen, I'm sorry. On the chart, is there a expected target that we're hoping to get marker or not?
If you remember, though, with NWA, they don't give you kind of grade level equivalents in that. They kind of give you what the median should be. And so on those charts, you'll see what the NWA median is
okay.
For, we just did the winter, so we'll get to kind of easy there. So we're going to go through all of math, and then we'll go through reading. And this starts really with our kindergarten. I won't go into a great deal of detail on that. It'll be represented by cohort data, but remember, these kids would have been in preschool last year, so we don't have data from that. This is their first data point. As Kim mentioned in the fall, this is the first year where we had every school test in the fall. So again, you've got, just as a reminder, here's the median in the fall, the median in the winter. Our median is here, and then the red line on each slide for the winter will show you what the NWA median is. And you will notice on every slide that our median is above NWA's median score, which is a good thing. Just kind of some things to look for as you look at the slides in that. I call it kind of stair steps. You want to see, you like when the median line goes up, as well as the 25th and the 75th percentile. You can kind of see up here as our, it's all just kind of going up as a nice stair step there. So that's kindergarten. Obviously not a lot of data there. First grade, I just want to remind you here, this data point only represents Franklin and Lincoln kindergartners from last year. Both two schools are the ones that took it in the fall. So the winter is really our beginning benchmark for all of the kids. Again, you can see this nice stair step. Here's where you may see a summer slide. You don't see it here. You may see it constant. So it's up a little bit, and then you see some nice growth here from fall to winter for our first graders, with the median really kind of jumped up there. You still have some outliers above and below. Typically, when you see all of a sudden this new, like, little outlier in the winter, that you can see this here, so it typically represents a student who's moved to us. A move-in, may not always, but the ones we kind of went through, that was pretty much what we noticed. So, second grade, again, if you look at their first grade scores, nice stair step. Here you, your first slide is, okay, summer slide. This is typically what we've always seen at the start of second grade. We see that dip. The map for primary has an audio component that supports the kids, and that goes away when they take the regular map and the grades 2-5 test. So this is not atypical of what we've seen in the past, and you'll see it on third grade, on the next slide for third grade as well, as how the kids recover. The other thing I wanted to mention too is kind of the shorter the box, the closer the range of scores are for that the kids in that band there. So that's another thing they like to look for. Like, this is a little bit shorter of a band, and so you don't have that as wide of spread of scores within there. So for third grade, again, you see here, this would have been their second grade score. You notice it's kind of that longer band. There was more spread. But as the kids went through all the second grade last year, you get to kind of a shorter band here. You see the good growth. With the median, you don't see a kind of a summer slide. You see it a little bit there over the summer. And again, how they're going through third grade, good growth there with the median and the overall box. Shows a nice step there. And here's that NWA median. Fourth grade, kind of staying very similar, so I'm just, you know, as you kind of look at that stair step here, where our median is a nice short box here for our fourth graders, which means that band's moving narrow. You still have your outliers. Kind of keep in mind, you know, teachers will have this range within their class. Kind of think about why we stress the importance of differentiation at workshop.
Karen, this summer slide that's showing up each time. So, you don't see it much there, but I'm wondering, from the spring to the fall, how many weeks of school are they really in school between those two tests?
We take the spring math in late April, early May.
Early May, and then when are you doing the fall?
It's early in September as we do.
So they're really not in school that much between those two tests then?
No.
Okay.
And remember, this is, you know, district-level data. Are there kids who have a summer slide?
Yeah.
Absolutely. But when you look at it from a district lens, you don't see it as much there. And then our fifth grade cohort data, again, you'll see this there. So you can kind of start to see. A few more outliers here, when you look at, we've got some kids who are coming away of here, and then you've got this little guy or girl right up here. Interesting to note on this one, you've got a nice short box here, but our kids who are at the 25th percentile are still above NWA's median score, and that's a great thing if you kind of think about it from that perspective. Just kind of an interesting way to kind of think about how well our kids can be doing here. So sixth grade, this is where you actually see that summer slide in both the median and how it dipped there. What stood out to me on this slide was these two little ones down here. Those were new students to the district. So obviously we have challenges when you have kids who are that discrepant. Making a year's growth is really not enough to close that achievement gap. So as the buildings kind of look at those kids and what can you do for them, when possible, to kind of accelerate their learning. Again, here's your NWA median score there, so where our kids compare are pretty good. Seventh grade. One of the things I noticed on both in seventh and eighth grade, the junior high, both math and reading, the boxes start to get a little bit lower. Here you've got, my guess is this is probably another new one who came in. And for some of these kids, they may be new to the country too. So in all fairness, we know the math test is not the best assessment for them, but we use it anyway just so we can kind of start to watch their growth over time. Then our eighth grade data. This looks different, but you need to notice that the scale on the side is different for this particular grade level, and that was to be able to get kind of our outliers in across the board there. Again, here for our eighth graders, here's the NWA median. It's a nice short box. And I was just kind of curious where this child score was a 283, just to kind of gauge, since the scale only went up to 250, I was just trying to see kind of how high it had gone at that point in time.
Karen, why is that scale, that 150, 200, 250?
Mike, do you want to go back?
That's it right there.
Well, yeah, the other increments were a little bit shorter, but over here, she's like 160, you could get it in, and it went up to 280 for seventh grade. But when you go back, you've got this one way down here below 150, and trying to get that up to, when you had like 290 would have been, you could just squeeze it in there. So we just adjusted that scale there. So, and we could have, pulled the outliers out, but we had them in for every other slide, so we just kind of left it in. So now we're going to switch to reading.
Sorry, can I ask a question back?
Just in general.
Anyway.
Okay.
Whichever one you want. So the 50% are in the box, then there's the outliers, and then we should just assume the other 25% are outside of the box but not an outlier?
Well, pretty much the majority of the other 50% of the kids fall above and below here. These are just a little smattering of a few kids.
Right, so those dots represent one kid.
One student.
But then there's 25% that are either somewhere below the 25% or above the 75%. So that's a fairly large population. Is there a way to understand if most of them are above, below, or do you get that in your plotting or not?
Well, I mean, these kids down here would be below the 25th percentile,
but it's,
right?
Yeah, but how would I know how many kids are in there? So I got 25%. I got 25% or so that aren't really reflected. In other words, they're not in a box, and they're not an outlier. Right?
Right. So depending on how many students you had 200 kids, 50% of them, 100 of them are going to be within this box, 50 would be above, and 50 below. I mean, obviously it might change a little bit because you've got a few more outliers. So you've got these outliers to get at that correct?
Okay. All right. You're just saying that because of the median, then. Okay.
Right.
All right. Okay. So you're not graphing those. It's just where the other 25% fall.
Right. Kind of their range of scores fall within there. Okay. So the buildings look at that level of detail, you know, and kind of which kids are there. And
right.
Okay. So here is then our reading. Again, this is our baseline data for this group of kids since they're in kindergarten. You can see some good growth here from fall to winter. And typically, obviously, kids come in reading, and you can see kind of stretch them there. First grade, again, this was just Lincoln and Franklin, so if we start with kind of the winter, these kids last year made some great growth between their winter and spring scores. Again, we don't see that summer slide or that dip. Looking up again, and again, some really nice growth for our current first graders in reading. Few outliers. Second grade. So, this is kind of pay attention here to the fall of second grade. Here, there was their first grade the scores. You can kind of see a huge jump there that was on that last slide. It is not unusual to see this wide range at the beginning of second grade, and you'll see it on the third grade cohort slide for last year's group in that. And then what ends up happening is this band, this 50% kind of box there, gets shorter over time. No outliers on the second grade for fall and winter. So just kind of pay attention to that. See how that big long box means that spread is a lot larger. But then over time, good growth for the second graders last year. You didn't see a big dip, and then you know that box is getting shorter, which is what we want to see. And then there's that NWA median score. And you can see, though, last year those first graders kind of were the bottom 25th percentile had actually gone. So again, if you kind of just look for that stair stepping, where things might fall. Again, not so much of a summer slide, but there's the stair step there, and then hopefully we can start to pick it up. You tend to see kind of a few more outliers in literacy. Again, it might be abroad or in the country, some of those kinds of things. Fifth grade. Cluster of those kids below, you have a lot of good stair steps there. Here again, you see that NWA median, our American kids are 25th percentile or above that, which is a good thing. Our sixth grade data, you don't really see the summer slide with that one either, again, above that median score. With our kids down here, you can kind of see a little bit of that stair step. I don't know if these are actually the same kids or not. We've got to do what we can to kind of accelerate and kind of get them up above that percentile there.
When you have those below the line there,
mm-hmm.
have you been able to understand, is it the same kids both in math and reading? Or is it half of the kids, or is it?
Typically, it is the same kids.
It's the same kids.
In both math and literacy. If they're a level one language student, it's very understandable because they kind of have the English language kind of to manage that assessment and that. They still kind of take where they're at the beginning and go from there. Seventh grade data. Again, you probably hopefully you start in math and then even in literacy. the higher up in the rib band you go, the boxes tend to be shorter across the board, but we're still seeing that slight stair step. And kind of the same thing with eighth grade as well. Their boxes are even shorter, I would say, but again, and I'm sure for Pete to see, I mean, you know, they're worried about our kids. You know, we know that, you know, we're coming in below that 25th percentile. And what we can do for them for now, because they will need assistance when they get to Weston next. So anything, anyway, this was just kind of that district level data. We kind of liked the way it's kind of laid out and looks at. You kind of see some things kind of quickly. Just a reminder of the importance of differentiation, why we stress it so much, just when we kind of look at that range of scores. Granted, it may not be in one room, but what the data kind of overall tells you is that our kids are continuing to grow. You see that as the median goes up, as well as those 25th and 75th percentile quartiles are also moving up as well. So just kind of that kind of higher level data. And as I mentioned too, in June, building principals kind of be presenting kind of more of that building level data as well, as I'm sure we'll have a district one too. So
as Karen's alluded to, we're trying to bring to the board three opportunities to see the data. This, you know, with our winter, just a quick snapshot of where we're at, how our students are doing, and how they're progressing toward that springtime, that April assessment through MAP. But we're really excited tonight to have the principal from Glenbard West, Mr. Peter Monahan, join us and speak to us about our students who. All District 41 students arrive at Glenbard West sooner or later. So with that,
they all end up in the same place. It's really interesting for me to be here. I'd like to first off really thank District 41 Board, President Kenwood, Dr. Gordon, Hadley Community for having me here tonight. This is special for me. I appreciate this opportunity. My background, I started off as an English teacher way back, came to Glenbard West about 20 years ago as a dean, served as an assistant principal for nearly 10 years, and now I'm in my second year as principal at Glenbard West. I can tell you that over those 20 years, the school has changed remarkably. And when I first came to Glenbard West, I was really impressed with the school, and I was kind of blown away and very honored to be there. But I have to tell you that, in particular, over the past 5 years, we've done some really special things. And we're on a bit of a journey, and we're trying to capture some things. I thought I'd just begin today by talking a little bit about one of our speakers that we've had at our Glenbard Parents Series. And I know that a number of you, and certainly some of the board members here, have attended our Glenbard Parents Series. This year we had a really interesting speaker, Amanda Ripley, who wrote this book, Smartest Kids in the World. If you're not familiar with this book, it's a super interesting piece of journalism. Amanda Ripley was interested in what how United States educational systems compare with some of the best educational systems in the world. So she starts off the book by talking about a test, an international achievement test called the PISA, which it's an acronym, and it stands for Program for International Student Assessment. We don't give it broadly in the United States, but they certainly give it in samples in the United States, and they determine that when they did this, there were three countries that really stood out as the highest level of achievement when it comes to all sorts of things, certainly math and science, but also creativity and being able to problem solve and work through issues and combine real life problems with academic achievement. Those countries, strangely, when they started to run these tests, ended up being Finland was at the very top, and also South Korea and Poland. And Amanda Ripley does an interesting thing. She follows three students who are exchange students to these countries. And she starts to sort of identify some of the characteristics that set these countries apart. And what she finds is that among these three countries, pushing students, challenging students, certainly providing them with rigor was probably one of the most important things that these countries did. And they all did them a little bit differently. So that's a whole separate story in and of itself. But I thought that was important because it's sort of central to many of the goals that we have going on at Glenmard West. And in talking about, before I really get to those goals, I want to talk just for a minute about some of the transitions that happened. We're very concerned, dialed into transition at Glenmard West, and wanting to make sure that we're having a good understanding of the students that are coming into Glenmard West and doing everything we can to introduce those students to the school. Some of the formal things that we do, we just had our curriculum night, and we had a great turnout for that night. We really had a good representation of what I think will be the close to 600 students that come in as a freshman class to Glenmard West come. Tomorrow night, we have our athletic and activity night. We really think that this is essential to success with students because we view our co-curriculars as co-curriculars. In other words, they support the academic offerings at Glenmard West, and they teach kids how to be in a team, how to challenge themselves, how to speak, how to listen, all the other core skill sets that we think are important to success in high school. I really want to emphasize summer school opportunities. We're really hitting this hard. I think it was really interesting to see those graphs, and certainly we might not always see a dip, but we do see, and we see this too, a little bit of a flat knife lining that happens between spring and fall. That's not a surprise because guess what? Kids are not in school. A lot of times our students, in particular our students who struggle, are not doing school, not reading, not writing, not challenging themselves. And sometimes they're doing things that might not be conducive for learning in general. Summer camp opportunities, again, that get students familiar with school. We think it's really important to, when we talk to parents, we say, have your student, whether they're struggling academically or whether you want to boost them up, involve them with a summer school opportunity. We really want to emphasize that. Also, what's the neat thing about that is that you can pair that with a great summer camp. And so we try to make sure that students coming into Glenmard West think hard, parents think hard about getting involved in the summer. We think that that's really important. We begin the school year with a freshman orientation day. We have senior mentors who are trained to work with our freshman class, and we have faculty coaches who act as mentors to the mentors. And so we have a very elaborate freshman orientation program that's geared toward emphasizing some of these very things that I just talked about. And then one of the things that we've done to change and to grow and expand on that is we have programming that goes throughout the rest of the year with our freshmen. So we have PLC Mondays where students get out a little bit early so our teachers can have professional development working in teams. And we have a number of Mondays throughout the year where we tell our freshmen, you need to stay, we have some programming for you, and we actually build a curriculum for those freshmen throughout the year. So those are some of the things that we do to help transition our freshmen into the school year. But let me talk just for a minute about some of the important goals that are happening at Glenmard West. One of the essential goals that Dr. Larson and the district and all four of the schools have really honed in on is this More to All goal. And probably the two areas where More to All goal really shows up more than anything else is the idea of getting our juniors into a math class that's at what we call Algebra 2 with trig or higher, and a science class that would be physics or higher. And there's a real good reason why we have honed in on these two areas, these two classes, because we found that when students are in these classes, they have a very high percentage chance of achieving a 20 or higher on ACT. When they receive a 20 or higher on ACT, typically colleges see them as being college ready. So that's a big connection. And we see, we get reports back from College Board, ACT, on how students test out. We see a definite correlation between students who are enrolled at this level in math and science and higher achievement in test scores. So that's a very important connection and something that we try to track through as best we can from the time that they're in eighth grade to the time that they end up as a junior. So the next slide demonstrates, I think, pretty well how successful students are when they come in to Glenbard West and how they disperse when it comes to grades. We do have, we do a grade distribution studies to determine where we're ending up with grades. And these are grades, they don't necessarily always correlate to learning. We like to think that they do. But certainly you will see that the students who come out of Hadley do very well and tend to be successful. The next slide shows you our honors track as well and how students kind of do in that area. It's a little bit more challenging, a little bit harder, but students do very well. This next slide demonstrates what we call EPAS growth in English. EPAS has been the growth that happens between explored tests that students at Hadley have taken in their fall year, fall term, and ACT. There's an expected amount of growth that happens in each subject area. So, for example, in English, we have an expected amount of growth that happens between Explore and ACT of 5 points. And you can see one of the things that we're really proud about at Glenbard West is that our entire population, and this is district, this shows district, but we're hitting our marks at Glenbard West above 5 points in each one of these areas. But Hadley students in particular will be a full point oftentimes above all Glenbard West students and all district students. So here in English, you see that this last junior class was a full 8 points above in English. And we have an expected growth rate of 5 points. So that's very impressive. The next slide shows you that for math, the difference from Explore to ACT is an expectation of 6 point growth. Hadley students, 6.55. Next, I think it's science, reading, excuse me. Expected growth of 6 points. Hadley students, 7.5. I'm tracking our junior class of this year. The next slide shows science, where we have a 4 point expected growth. Hadley students, 5.68. And as you can see, we've shown you data from not only this year, but back to 2012. And consistently, our Hadley students do very well as an average. What's the next slide that I wanted to show you? Oh, yeah. AP enrollment and AP testing is something that we really emphasize. And not that advanced placement classes are the answer to everything. But again, keeping with that theme of enhancing rigor, pushing students into a challenging curriculum, we encourage students, when possible, to take AP courses. And we have really explored certain subject areas where we can expand our AP offerings. Last year, we sat over 1,900 tests in advanced placement, which is remarkable. And our growth, I didn't bring a slide here, but our growth with AP over the past 5 years has more than doubled. So this has been a real point of pride for us, not necessarily because when students, a lot of times you hear parents and counselors talk about, colleges, you can cut short your college career by a year. But we're finding it's more common is that students or colleges, more challenging colleges, want to see these AP classes. They're not necessarily going to shed a semester off of your college experience because you're going to be going to a better college. So that makes sense. But we have really expanded our AP offerings, and I feel like that has really benefited our students really strongly. So you'll see here that when you compare the sender average and Hadley, that Hadley has a significant number of kids coming in these AP classes who are prepared to be in these AP classes. And we'll grow an AP student, too. Sometimes if students come into us, they might be in a world history regular freshman class, which is great because our teachers all pride themselves, in particular in social studies, on offering other AP classes as students grow. That happens also in our world language with Spanish for native speakers. So we look for avenues for students to find themselves. Maybe they don't start off there, but places where they can find themselves reaching out, exploring their own strengths academically. So the next slide shows you our graduation rate. That should not be a surprise for anyone. All senders, 95, Hadley, 97. And then this next slide talks about involvement. This has been something that's very, very important to us. We keep talking about it. 51% of Hadley students are involved in an activity, 65% in athletics. When you combine the two, we see that nearly 90% of Hadley students are involved in either a club or a sport. And we think that that's really, really important. And as a school, Glenbard West, this shows all centers. At Glenbard West as a school, last year we had over 80% of our kids involved in athletics and or a club or activity. Do I have another slide or is that it? That's it. So I think that the other point that I wanted to raise that I didn't bring as a slide here is really students who struggle. And we have honed in on those students and identified them. And one of our biggest challenges and something that is really important to me is to make sure that we're providing all the interventions that we can for those students. The number one intervention happens in the classroom. And that's something that I think all of our teachers understand. Teachers, you know, at Glenbard West have worked in different instructional practices, assessment literacy, different question-forming techniques, problem-based learning, to really get kids to be more engaged. This year, as you know, also we have begun introducing technology, one-to-one technology into the classroom with our iPads. I can tell you the thing that has made that work is preparation. We gave them to our teachers and we brought our teachers through a curriculum a full year ahead of time. And that has allowed our teachers to be prepared when we started. And then for our students, in introducing them to our students, we had our kids go through, those of you who are freshmen at Glenbard West know, when they received those iPads, there was some pretty rigorous training and responsibility training that went along with those devices. And we'll keep working on that. But that's something that we've seen a lot of success in. There's good research around introducing technology, one-to-one technology, linked to engagement in the classroom. That's what it's all about for us, and that's what it's about for our teachers. And when we think about students who struggle, we know that it's about engaging them in the classroom and outside of the classroom. So I hope I didn't go over my limit.
You are just fine. That was fantastic. Board?
Any questions, anybody?
Just something that came up at finance as we were looking at the technology and budget. And one of the things that we mentioned was this roll up now with freshman year, this first year, the fact that I have these students are using Google Docs and we're using the same toolkit, you know, as we transition, it's an easier, more seamless transition for them, too. So, I mean, regardless of the platform, the tool, you know, they're using learning.
And I'll tell you something that's remarkable about kids. They adapt. They can adapt very well. We have introduced Schoology. Many of our teachers are using Schoology, which is a fascinating learning platform that allows kids to turn in work electronically, to take assessments electronically, to collaborate with each other outside of the classroom, to watch screencasts that teachers present and store. So I'm sure that those are many of the things that have been having too. But this is a brave new world that we're going into, and it's very exciting for us.
Board?
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments from anyone? I just want to thank you for attending yet another board meeting in your life. So appreciate that. I've had a child that graduated from Glen Bard West One. Hopefully he was a good kid. And I've got two other kids there now, and we're very proud of what we do in District 41. But I just want to say we're very proud of what you do in Glen Bard West, and thank you for everything you do. I think having kids go through the whole system for me as a board member has been helpful, as I understand what it is you're doing with the kids, especially in the honors and the AP classes, and the engagement that you're looking for kids in clubs and athletics. So that's an important transition that hopefully we can continue to drive here. So I really sincerely appreciate everything you guys do. It's a wonderful institution. But I'm always looking for improvement. So I guess the question I would have for you is if there's one or two things that you'd like to see us do, do a better job of, what would they be? Have you put any thought to that in terms of what could we do to better prepare our kids to become your kids?
That's a great question, and I really appreciate it. I do think that we need to work together to link up and try to identify kids sooner and think about things that we can do maybe even prior to eighth grade to try to identify kids that might be scoring lower than they should score and identifying what the standards are for each. I think that Park is doing a lot of that already. But I think partnering, we've had teams coming to Glen Bard West. We've had our science team work with you guys. I think that's been hugely beneficial. I think that's something we should continue to learn together on and work together on. Really, I think it's about collaborating and communicating. So I'm really excited about actually an opportunity like this to come and talk to the board.
Right. For me, I think that's the piece that I've been so pleased with. Not being a unit district, at times it can be really challenging for districts, but for us we're very fortunate that the vast majority of our students all feed into Glen Bard West, and with our collaboration that continues to grow, as you mentioned, with the science department and other departments throughout your school district and ours. It will make us stronger in our constant communication, and tonight coming out and presenting helps show and foster that collaboration even more. So I really appreciate you coming out, and I know how much you enjoy presenting at board meetings. So we'll get you on for another couple meetings with us. And you brought out a huge crowd. I told them they all knew you were coming out. They wanted to come see you.
And a big congratulations to your AP Euro Teacher of the Year, Mr. Fornaseri.
So yeah.
Congratulations on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Discussion items. Discussion items. No discussion items to schedule. Action items. The consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes human resources personnel report, employee recommendations, leave requests, resignations and retirements, dismissals, finance, facilities and operations, treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly revenue expenditure summary report, summary of bills and payroll, vandalism, disposal of surplus property, 2014-2015 FOIA report, school district payment order February 3rd, 2015 through February 17th, 2015, other matters, approval of board meeting minutes, February 9, 2015 regular board meeting, February 9, 2015 regular board meeting closed minutes, annual review of closed session minutes, and destruction of closed session audio recordings.
Motion.
We have a second.
Second.
Roll call.
Mrs. Wilkinson? Yes. Mr. Alter?
Yes.
Mr. Boczynski?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes. Okay, superintendent's recommendations. Okay, superintendent's recommended Churchill classroom addition to replace remaining portables. Before I proceed, I'd like to note that there is a change to the recommendation, specifically in the other costs and information section. The language of the first bullet point was changed to read, use of all allowances remaining from the original 17 classroom addition project, and the second bullet was updated to read, use of 500 to 700,000 currently included in the 2016 working budget as capital projects, and the third bullet was updated to read, use of 1.2 million of existing fund balances. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation for Churchill classroom additions to replace remaining portables as presented?
Motion.
May I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Comments?
So the change that was noted there was really to allow for greater flexibility, financial flexibility for administration. That's what that aspect is allowing for, that we would be able to take any of the remaining funds from the current 17 and be able to apply it to. We just wanted to make sure the language was really clear that we were going to use all of those funds, not just the 1.2, but if there we were able to capture a few more, we would like to use we would like to use those directly for that. So that was what that clarity was for.
But it protects the original project.
It does.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else want to?
That was my question for the last time. I think Jeff, I asked that of you a couple weeks ago, and that was, you know, do you see any? We're 2 weeks further into it. We heard from
I think it does provide that kind of flexibility, so that if something does happen in the existing project, we've got the money there to use for it, but if it's not necessary, then any dollars that are in that budget then can flow into this construction.
Was there any discussion about having the amount that we could pull out of the operating budget?
Yeah, we put it at 500 to 700,000.
The last bullet says additional funding is needed to be taken from the 2015 working budget. So I don't see that as capped the money.
I think the important number that's capped there is what's coming out of the fund balance.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, who suggested this change, I appreciate it. TMA. I feel that.
I think if you can speak up.
I will speak up. Thank you. Erica asked me to. Is a better number to cap the one where we're taking out of the fund balance than the operating balance?
So at some point down the road, if we have to pull more out of operating balance, it's going to come to the board and figure that we would approve separately. You can't just
Correct.
Go and take a million out of operating because you want to finish the project.
And I think from a fiscal conservative standpoint, I think that's a better approach to take because that number would come back to us.
Okay.
So that's why
good question.
I made the suggestion. I do want to point out if you're on the budget, if there's a budget on soft costs too, and this is, I went through these numbers over the weekend, and Bob presented at the last Finance Committee the soft cost budget, which you're not in charge of, Jack, so I'm not putting pressure on Jack here. My hope is that there's more savings in the soft cost budget also that we're seeing with the final 8 months of this project. So I anticipate we want to even improve upon those numbers that are presented in this recommendation.
Right, because he's given us a low and a high. I mean, two of those are the same, but then there is a difference between those other ones. So we're saying that there could be that it may not end up in the high.
At the last Finance Committee, Bob presented the actuals compared to the budget on the 17 classrooms that we have now.
Mm-hmm.
And I anticipate in that budget that there will be further savings beyond the 1.2 that is in the hard cost budget.
Mm-hmm.
And that was presented again tonight in your update on the budget you provided. So I just speaking what I anticipate at the end of the day, and I think this, the writing of this recommendation gives us more flexibility, and at the same time, this really takes a much more of a fiscal conservative approach of using all savings right for this recommendation of these four additional classrooms.
So the way I interpreted this, and I want to make sure I'm, because something you said makes me feel I didn't interpret it that way. Sounds to me that we have, let's say, a range of a cap of $500,000 to $700,000 out of working capital, right? And then we've got a 1.2 out of reserves. Now, what that says is any time after the $500,000 to $700,000 or the 1.2, it comes back to the board to see whether we take it out of working capital or reserves. In other words, we don't have to always take it out of working capital. If it ends, let's say we go into $1 million overrun, we have that flexibility to take it out of whichever budget we have, right? I'm concerned your fiscal conservative point is saying, no, we're not taking any more out of reserves, we're forcing it out of the working capital budget.
The way it is worded here is additional funding if needed, which is your example if we're over budget, to be taken out of the 2000.
They can't hear you.
Okay, I talked to you, so I'll talk to them. Sorry. Additional funding, if needed, to be taken from the 216 working budget operational expenditures. So it's pretty specific where you're taking those funds if you have $1 million overage from the operating budget.
Why do we want to handcuff ourselves on that note?
Well, they can come back for an approval, but I think when you're putting a budget forward, as you're doing and we're approving, you need to stick to that budget. And you don't want to be taking it out of your reserves to do that.
I would prefer to take it out of reserves, money that we're not really using, than hampering the administration from having the resources to do what they need to do. That's what I worry about. I like the idea that, hey, we have limits, but a future board should be able to say, gee, we're going to take it out of either the reserves or the working capital.
I believe that this administration can come with a recommendation at that time to then do that if you have $1 million overage. Certainly that is in their realm to make a recommendation.
Right, and that's what I want to make sure we're not boxing ourselves into.
Well, I think this puts you in a better position, because if you did it the other way, John, I think what you're doing is not having that restriction of where it's coming from. Because I can tell you the reserves has enough. Okay, so I see this as, if it occurs, then they have to come back to us.
So you're forcing the conversation.
That's what I'm saying. Is I'm not saying the other way. I'm saying I want to be able to force the conversation on either one. That we would have to come back to the board to make that decision. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think this forces the conversation in the direction you need it forced.
Yeah. Okay.
Because the pot is you have access to that pot. That's what I want to restrict. And this does that.
I don't see the fourth bullet as forcing an issue. It appears to me that the fourth bullet is already saying that we're going to approve additional funding if needed for the 2016-14 budget.
Right.
So how is that coming back to the board at a later date for approval?
Well, this is how I see it, Captain.
So how I've seen these two bullet points is you have $5 million in working capital projects, right? That's out there to protect the integrity of the school board and the bond ratings and all that other stuff. Seeing we're only gonna dip $500,000 out of that, then that's what we're setting a ceiling of. We're not opening up the spigot per se for this board or future boards to say, always go into the reserves of the capital budget. Force a conversation that it's going to have to come out of operating.
I see. Okay. So what you're saying is, if in the future we need more money to cover a Churchill project,
this Churchill project.
Thank you. Then we have to look to the operating fund first to cover it before we do something specific.
But administration may come to the board to say, you know what? As we've looked at this, we would recommend going into fund balance, or that we would be able to handle it within the operating budget.
Right. And that, I just want to make sure we've got that flexibility and that we discuss that. So
there are two things that I followed up with Bob. One was I had asked him on the website, our modular classroom cost, is what he calls it, hadn't been laid out to our current data. So I just want to mention that that's up there now, and I think it's important because it really shows our total cumulative cost for what the portables have cost over time. And I think that's an important number to think about as we look at, you know, doing this project. Right now, total cumulative sub cost is over $3 million over the last, 12 years of portable classrooms. The other thing I asked Bob was, and this is part of what John and the others are talking about, but when we talk about taking out of our working capital, we know that in Bob's planning, his agent obsolescence, but also the other planning, I asked him to make sure that there's nothing coming up that is in need of those dollars, and he assured me 2 weeks ago, and then I followed up with him again, and he showed me. So part of it is the way he's been doing repairs over time since he came into the district and did that full-blown review and then wrote that long-range plan. But I think that's kept us on track in terms of seeing where we might have a big capital expenditure and, you know, knowing that, you know, that either is not coming or it is coming. So that was a concern for me, because that is, it's a large amount of money, and we need, you know, to make sure we have those dollars set aside. So I just wanted to report that in, because it came up at the last meeting. I'm satisfied that you did that.
Anyone else?
I'm just going to circle back to the four classrooms, the budget. I appreciate the change for the how we're funding it. And I think last time we were here, some of you guys may remember, I was still doing research, and I wanted to feel comfortable 100% with this, and I'm going to thank everybody I thanked last time, some of the parents at Churchill, for Paul and the staff, especially Bob and Paul. Also, I did do what I call site inspection, but I did a tour on February 10th, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about my feelings of kind of, I reconciled it over the days after doing that. And one thing that came, and it's always good to go for me, being a visual guy, real estate background, seeing sites is very important, seeing how it's utilized. And one thing that became very evident, and Scott, thank you for your time, it was very helpful, Kim was on the tour too, is that you're utilizing your building, you know, probably at 110% capacity. It is at some level, I told Paul when I was done that the kids don't mind. They're doing their thing, but there's kids on top of kids, you know, in resource areas. And we know that that population of that school is a little different than our other schools. So there's a lot more pressure put on that brick and mortar. And when you go there, you can feel it. And so for me, it was never about portables. I know there's been good discussion about getting rid of portables. I go back to when I ran and I wrote my Daily Herald thing. That was my number one consideration or reason for running, was I wanted to use some of my real estate expertise to help help this district do a better job with its facilities. And I think portables was the number one priority. But that said, this tour really gave me that feeling. I went back then and looked at data. For me, looking at, and I asked Paul to put this together and his staff, 5 years worth of data of where Churchill, following the cohorts from K all the way through. And what becomes very evident is that we have a fourth grade class that has been supporting you so much, Scott, giving you an extra classroom. And there's 80-some kids in the four classes that came in after that, average over 110. So just being a numbers person, you've got to guess those next two classes coming in are going to be at the same point. Then where would we be? You know, so the pressure that you're putting on these classrooms, on your brick and mortar, is very high in my opinion, at least from my perspective. So I thought that was very important to share with you guys. I appreciate everybody's time. But that's, at the end, where I come and where I went to get
Thank
that.
You. Thank you.
I appreciate that. I mean, as someone that took, you know, tours of that facility before and recently found myself out there one night with a flashlight checking out the foundation and where we could fit other things.
We read about that in the police.
Realizing that there are two very big dogs there on the west side of the fence. That kind of scared me a little bit. You know, I appreciate that you took the time to do that. You know, obviously for me, I'm very excited about this recommendation. Most excited that, you know, we're going to get rid of the portables without being dependent on a referendum. And I think that's great. Appreciate, you know, that our plans have changed and that as a board and administration, we are flexible enough to make those plans change. And that, you know, that's something unique that you're able to do. So I appreciate that everyone did that. And for me, you know, I remember my first form at Churchill's, first candidate form, and I do remember I felt like I was making a connection, and I hadn't been as involved in Churchill as with this project, so I felt that was good, and it really gave me a chance to spend some time with Liz and Kelly and Jen, and just want to thank you guys for your effort, you know, and your participation in this recommendation. There were other Churchill members, too, that were a part of this in conversations. And, you know, you guys provided, at least for me, a great knowledge and understanding of the school itself to help move this decision forward. Your time in meeting with Paul and some other board members, I think, was valuable to educating us. You had a really respectful attitude, which was nice to see. And quite honestly, you guys have been a, you know, we mentality. I was talking to someone today. It's just more of a we mentality than a me mentality with regards to the school. So I'm very happy about this recommendation, and obviously we'll be supporting it. So thank you guys very much.
I think in the end, to kind of circle back, I said this, I think, a couple weeks ago or even the meeting before, and as you look through all of the material and this, you know, certainly a tome at this point, that where we are with the construction with the other classrooms and the iterative process of that moving forward has allowed us, and, you know, kudos against a good construction management to be in a position to have, you know, be able to make some of this decision. So there's, you know, all these pieces that come together. You don't have a crystal ball, but as you start to see it, if you can capture that moment and hop on it, I think that's, you know, what we've been able to do with the programs to the parents and certainly our professional partners, too.
So let's take a vote and put this baby to bed.
Yep.
So that everybody can smile. Roll call.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson.
Yes.
Mrs. Wilkinson.
Yes.
Mr. Escalante.
Yes.
Mr. Elder.
Yes.
Mr. Boczynski.
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood.
Yes. Okay.
That doesn't happen very often at a board meeting.
Okay.
What did you think?
Next is the full day kindergarten program.
Karen's gonna talk to us just briefly about full day kindergarten one more time.
Okay.
So these are really just a few slides to kind of demonstrate what kind of a half day program really looks like versus a full day. And so this is basically kind of a current half-day program, and I literally just put kind of the subject areas and then the amount of time. So I put literacy social studies. They'll kind of talk about, I mean, social studies content is usually communities, read aloud, things like that. They do kind of some whole group and then stations and small groups. And you see a range kind of 60 to 75 minutes. Some of the buildings have been explicit about their mid time, and so they felt that, you know, the actual core literacy time was about 60 minutes. I'll explain them, my numbers in parentheses after that. And then really it's been math for 30 minutes. This year they rolled out one new NGSS, Next Generation Science Standards unit, and so that kind of took the place of math kind of during that time. And then they've got like a specials rotation, and it's 20 to 30 minutes, 4 days a week. And then they work on going to the library for checkout, and we've actually transitioned to more flexible checkout even with our kindergartners. And this, they're really working with a total of 160 minutes, and that includes arrival and dismissal time. A couple months ago, I actually had a meeting with all of the kindergarten teachers on a sit morning, and the numbers in parentheses was what I had asked them to really try to push for in their literacy and math. That left them like 5 minutes for arrival and 5 minutes for dismissal. And of course, with this cold weather, you can imagine it's going to take a little bit more than 5 minutes to get a room full of kindergartners. So that other time is typically what that block of time tends to look like. So then on the next two slides, it really kind of shows you what a possible full day schedule would encompass. Keep in mind, no matter what, you always have to offer half day. Mm-hmm. And so as a group would begin to study this, they would be more explicit about that half day versus full day. And so with this, I kind of put in what what would be called kind of like a morning meeting, where you start with a morning message, but it's also that time where you really address those social emotional needs. You do some problem solving about issues they've had in stations, some of those kinds of things. You get to a lot of even kind of the learner characteristics. You might include some of those literacy type things. However, it is really about kind of problem solving and how we solve those little issues. You can do bullying. There are little curriculums you can use, but often it's just through that morning meeting, kind of 20 to 30 minutes. You start the year with smaller chunks of time to build up to some of that. Then in literacy and social studies, you see I basically kind of double that amount of time. It gives you a good solid block with that 60 minutes on the previous page. Remember, in literacy, you need reader's workshop, writer's workshop. You're doing handwriting, letter work, word work, small group instruction, because as you saw in the data, we have kids who are reading. You kind of take those kids where they're at, and you continue to stretch them. So this kind of doubles that time. You continue with those things. Obviously, you're going to have more time to do it. You get a true readers and writers workshop, but you also have kind of that time for that kind of creative dramatics, that play aspect in there as well. In math, again, you literally double the amount of time over the course of the day. Not only would you still have your stations, your small group, but even your extension. And then I kind of continued it on the next slide, which the daily specials rotation, I had on the other slide as well, 20 to 30 minutes, probably times two, kind of two times a day to double that. And this I kind of used a 6-hour, 360-minute time frame in that. What is new on here is really that dedicated time for science and engineering. The engineering practices begin at kindergarten. It's really that inquiry, hands-on learning. A lot of your PBLs would come into play there. Lunch and recess, I put 15 minutes. You probably start the year with 60 to get, you know, they're very slow. You kind of want to wean them off, because if you gave them an hour to eat, they would take the hour to eat. They're just very social. So you do kind of work with that. But this would really be fleshed out with, as I mentioned before, that group of teachers to kind of define, but you'd be more explicit, you have more time kind of for your transitions as well.
Karen, is that I have two 20 to 30 minute daily special rotations?
Yeah, okay. in the 6-hour day is what and I just kind of used an hour.
Yeah, but I mean it's literally 40 minutes to an hour of some type of rotation a day.
And, you know, I put perhaps with the consideration of moving class to starting at the kindergarten level as well, which is a 30 minutes a day, and be able to do that. So does it kind of give you a sense? The other thing I would also suggest that's always helpful with the little ones too is to kind of do that little quick afternoon meeting, because a lot happens with people not getting along and how can we problem solve and some of that, and that's it's a good structure to do it in that little community meeting that they problem solve through.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, you're adding more time, but it's also, some of it is the, I don't know what you call it, the motor, sensory component, the social, emotional, right? So the PBLs are around those type of things in science, for example, that could be,
very much.
I just want to remind everyone, this is a thought, this is a stake in the ground, but there's a committee that's going to happen over the summer where all this will be fleshed out and could come out to be a little different, but I know at least I had requested to understand a little bit more about what that schedule would be, what we would focus in on, which is more time for the core, spending more time in the science, and then having these rotations where the kids can have activities such as art, music, you know, and things like that. So it's helpful for me to understand directionally where we're going.
Thanks, Karen.
Okay, so we have a motion, and it's not on my script, but I guess I'll the motion is the recommendation. That's
correct.
In
here,
right.
Yes.
So I just want to make sure everyone understands the motion. So really, this is a recommendation that we as a board approve the continued exploration. So we've been already exploring, but the continued exploration of a facility solution that supports full-day kindergarten and removal of the remaining portables at Hadley. So that's the recommendation that we'd be voting on. And then as a part of that, Should I have the motion first and then go through this as a discussion? I think so.
Let's do the motion.
So the motion is, so may I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation that the Board of Education approve continued exploration of a facilities solution that supports full-day kindergarten and removal of the remaining portables at Hadley?
Motion.
Second. Okay, discussion. Let me just add the part of the discussion here that we wanted to have is, so this recommendation is specific to a facility solution that supports full-day kindergarten, and that the administration will proceed to further engage the staff and community to study a K-5 facility solution, study an early learning center facility solution, study a solution to support the removal of the portables at Hadley, and develop full-day kindergarten curriculum. We have a cost not associated with this, not to exceed $10,000. If so, the administration would come back to the board. Mm-hmm. That is the roadmap for this recommendation. I know in our last meeting, at least I brought up, is the scope of this, there are two things I want to bring up. One is the scope of this for the Spalding site. Is that something, that's something that was thrown out there? Do we want to modify this to make the K-5 or the early learning center at the Spalding site? Do we want to make that a part of the recommendation? That's the first question that I would have out there, whether you guys want to do that or not, or leave it open.
Do you have another question? Do you have a second question?
I do. Would you like to hear that one?
Is it tied in?
Sure. The second one is on this, there is no solution to be explored around the existing facilities. And I would like to bring that to everyone's attention because I would think that that is still something we're going to put on there.
I think both of those questions are asked by the ambiguity of the recommendation, is it not? It doesn't say facilities only at Hadley or facilities in the existing structures or building a new building somewhere else. This is broad enough to allow Paul to engage the community and civic leaders to determine the best program and the best facilities recommendation to bring to the board to vote upon.
Well, it does limit in the sense that the solution could be a K-5 or early learning center. It doesn't, for example, allow us to do a 5-6 center,
right,
or other things that were brought up in our listening sessions. So it also, you know, a little history here. When facilities was put into the Finance Committee came out with a recommendation to look at a large parcel of land, which was yet another approach. So
I disagree, John, because I think it says, and remove of remaining portables at Hadley. Why couldn't that be part of the 5-6 center? 5-6 center.
Yeah, if I could just jump in here. Many of these things have been looked at previously. What I'm trying to do is streamline this process. Prior administration, prior boards looked at the 5-6 center on Spalding. They looked at it as a much larger acreage. Yeah, footprint. Because if we put a 5-6 center on there, we're talking 800 students there. We do not believe that is a viable solution for that area. That is why it's not on there. We heard from the community. We've heard conversations about adding on to the buildings. We do not believe that is a viable solution. The pieces that we put on here, we do believe, I appreciate John bringing this piece up, we do believe the solution is at Spalding, either a K-5 or an early learning center. So what this is doing is narrowing that field and putting it into these two areas with Spalding being the site.
Well, the way I read this, you're asking us to approve the study of a K-5 facility or an early learning center, and you're not asking us to limit it to only being built in Spalding.
We could add that piece in there.
That's why I'm suggesting if we all feel that we're going to go to a group of citizens and we're going to give them what they're going to be part of exploring a solution. And Right now, we've said, in this recommendation, we've said K through 5 or early childhood center. We haven't said where. So the question is, do we want to explore mm-hmm. beyond Spalding or not? And the second question is, do we want to include doing it at the existing buildings, or do we want to just take all that out and say go out and... So I think Paul's trying to get a little focus yeah. in where we go.
I would agree with Paul. The boards have done that work. We've done, you and I served together, and Drew was on that in the last. The whole look at other, looking at other large enough parcels. There was one up on North Avenue by the Menards, and that was not going to be a location that would be feasible. We were given expert advice on that. We looked at Wheaton College, which was really the property within our boundaries that allowed for enough of an acreage. That did not move forward. So I feel like it's I do not want this to go backwards. I really want this to move forward with the insight of community, parents, community members, et cetera. And so the reality is we have 4.86 acres at Spalding, and that's the land that we own. I think if we need to put that in so that there's no confusion, let's put it in. But I think that's where we've ended up, and I think it's an appropriate place to start, and it gives people a framework. Just an anecdote, when we were looking at right-sizing by taking fifth graders out of the elementary schools to come to this property, and then we're looking at building that wing of 5-6 and then a 7-8 and creating internal space. I was at a coffee, it was actually right around this neighborhood, and there was a community member who said, you're going to take up more green space, I like to walk my dogs there. And one of the persons who was working on the master facility study at that point, who was there, was a parent here at Hadley at the time, said, with all due respect, I understand what you're saying. We get used to the way property looks and how we use it. But, she said to him was, we're not the park district. We really are thinking about this from the lens of education. What's the best for our students? And so, I think the need to engage our Spalding, residents, et cetera, up there is absolutely appropriate. And this would be the way to do it, because we're saying the property's been owned by us. We've not sold it. It's where we have to build. And we always keep coming back to this. So I think we need to build that in.
Anybody else?
I would agree that we need to build it in. I think that one thing I've really enjoyed with this administration and since I've been on the board is the fact that we have started to rely on all this work that you guys did over the last 11, 12, 13 years that this has been going on. And I noticed that when we get into conversations in the community, there's always someone who has a favorite project from 8 years ago or 10 years ago or thinks of a different way. And the more we can narrow this down, because we've spent so much time looking at this, I think the better we'll be able to move things forward. And we've been able to do that so far with the portables. I think we've demonstrated that again tonight with Churchill by saying, let's finish this project. We can do it. This is something we can get our arms around. Let's get it done. And I think that's the way we should proceed forward with this. We should narrow the scope and get to work on it.
Anyone else? Okay, and then on the second, are we limiting it to a K through 5 early learning center on Spalding, or are we going to add a solution on the existing facilities?
If I can start to weigh in on that, I don't think adding a solution under the existing facilities goes back to our goals. Our first two goals we had were to eliminate the portables and then the right size of schools. And I think if we keep trying to expand on the property we have, we're stressing the neighborhoods in those areas and we're stressing the buildings, like we talked about with Churchill already. So I don't think that we should spend much time and money looking at that solution, because it doesn't resolve some of the goals that we set up as a board. I think we've spent enough time on this to know that probably the answer is a small one.
Anybody else?
The only caveat I would make to that is when I went back and reread all the notes from the listening sessions, the question, because that option, was presented, and there's dollars associated with it. In fact, we got an email pretty quick after the first listening session saying, you know, I choose that, you know, and it was, you know, dollar-based, does it make sense to do a side-by-side? Because at one point, it was either Ron or Jack who talked about if we went into the buildings, and they showed us, you know, Lincoln would be internal, it would be over a period of time because we don't have a place to relocate the children. You know, we just, you know, we're again, stretched or, for that. But will there be, you know, questions to truly do a side-by-side to show this, in fact, is what it would cost to do that work in order to build in an all-day kindergarten option, and then also deal with the reality of needing still these other spaces in the buildings that we still need. Because we're not done yet, which is why we're looking at, you know, building a larger, you know, a new building rather. So I would ask a question of, you know, my fellow board members, you know, John, Jack, and Ron at one point talked about in a couple of the buildings, Lincoln was one, but Churchill was the other one, where you'd have to, you know, kind of gut and redo in the library, and you know that's not a $17 million project. You know, I mean, there's other costs to that. So we saw that initial view to do these pieces of it, but I want to make sure that the community understands that it's bigger than that. And I don't know what it would cost to do that side by side, but I wonder if it's important to do it so that we can give that data and show, in fact, what that real cost is. If this were an option that people are thinking, you know, I'd prefer to do that.
I would just ask, is that a real option? Are you going to, because I'm going to ask you for more money then to do more of that, because I'm going to need to engage the architects again on doing that conversation. I just don't know if that is a real solution.
Because of the obstacles that are presented because of that. I mean, the cost not associated with if you need a swing school, or it's going to take you 4 years to do Lincoln because you're going to do them in little sections while the kids are in school. It doesn't have the cost of what it does of that construction to go to school. The cost of the kids. It doesn't have the fact that at the end of the day, the four buildings all are different now. They aren't parity with loss. Here we are speaking parity in 14 through 5, and it's loss. So, I mean, it's a lot of what we heard, too, those obstacles. Mm-hmm. So some of them, I don't know that you ever overcome. Mm-hmm. So I personally don't want to spend money, the district's money, to explore those. I understand.
I just want to put it out there because, you know, as we listen to the community, because there's a number fixed to that, I think there might be the question, well, why not? How come that was the least expensive? See what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I would go back to those listening sessions, and it's clear that these two did rise to the top, but there was still enough of a constituency, I think, around this other solution that I think we ought to consider it as a part of this. I don't know what additional cost it's going to be, Paul, in the sense of, you know, the recommendation here is that an exploration of the facility solution that will involve and engage the community. And I think it should be an option on the table, and they should, you know, they may come back to us and say not worth exploring. I mean,
why do we have to discount it completely? Why can't we just say we go down the recommendation that we're talking about, Spring Avenue, but that community...
Spalding. Spring would be a whole different
But leave that as a bookmark or a mile marker to when we get the community engagement and the administration, and they're striving towards this goal, is all right. Does this still make sense?
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to say let's just take it off the table, but let's not discuss it any further until it has to be discussed, because they're finding, the community is finding, the civic leaders that are going to lead this conversation are finding, wow, this is bigger than what we think it is going to be in the cells that we're going to have to do. We're just not going to be able to do it without saying, because we did this level 2 work of expanding out the buildings. Let's not
throw it out, but let's not discuss it yet until our civic leaders say the option and recommendation that you gave us is going to be a hard sell unless we bring this as an option.
I mean, I think as in any recommendation, you've got an existing set of facilities, and it's got to be considered as a part of it. So are we okay adding that in? Or
what are we spending the money on? That's the thing. So if we're spending money on more than conceptual plans, and besides this $10,000 or just below $10,000, thank you. You're also spending man hours.
Yeah.
So, you know, somewhere you have to stop piling on when you see these obstacles. I don't think it's off the table, because if it gets on the table because there's more community engagement, the community engagement is, you better look at this. Then Paul comes back to us and says, I need approval for more funds to go study this with Ron and Jack and so on and so forth.
I think that's the plan, because I think the first step in your roadmap is to start to put together a committee to start to look at this. So I don't know that we're spending dollars yet with architects and things, but we are spending man hours by facilitating these sessions.
I would think you are right away, because when you're forming these committees, you're going to be, Ron's going to be presenting what an early learning center looks like and what K-5 looks like.
Right.
I mean, you're going to start doing renderings and things like that, so when you're speaking to the neighborhood, they can see, hey, this is a two-story building, and this is how it looks, and this is the viewpoint from my house and how it looks. I mean, those are the things you normally do, and you need to have that ready as you're forming those committees. So I think these dollars, with the changes to the Spalding site, fits. What Patrick's saying, what I hear you saying, is if there's pushback, then you're going to come back to us and say, look at the expansions.
Because
right now, the expansions have limited, there's obstacles. It's limiting what we're going to get at the end. We as the board need to make that decision to say, do we really need to pursue this at this time, given those obstacles and the limited product we get at the end of the day? I sit here and say, given that we have limited product, and you're not going to like what you end up with, especially at Lincoln, where you're going to disrupt these children's lives for 3 to 4 years, maybe 3 years, maybe less. So it sounded like 3 when Jack presented.
Well, I think it was 2 to 3.
Yeah. So
not 3 to 4, but 2 to 3.
I want to pick up on what Joe was just saying in terms of the limitations that we face with current space and what we've already got in place. That doesn't respond to what we've heard from the community, that we want a district that excels and will be able to do so for 20 years ahead or 30 years ahead. And I think that we have, I know in the last year since I've been here, we've done a fair amount of research into what the options are to fix our space problems. And we see all kinds of problems with trying to modify our existing space. I think it's a very forward-looking view for us to say, go for the 20 or 30-year solution. You've already found out that there are enough problems with the short-term patches on the current buildings that we shouldn't be distracted with that anymore. We should be moving forward with something that's really going to ensure adequate space for a couple of generations ahead.
And I want to be clear. The reason I brought this up is because I want to make sure that the community knows that we have vetted and you know, recognize that still may be question marks for people. I am not interested in spending more money with renderings and all that, but I want to be sensitive to the fact that people, you know, connected with a number, and that without the data is going to look like something that makes sense.
Yeah,
so we've got to be clear about that.
No, it's good to bring it up.
We're starting here, right, the funnel, and then you know it gets smaller and smaller as we come down.
Well, it's good to bring it up because this is now part of this meeting, and we've discussed why we want to do what we're doing, and we wouldn't have done that had you not opened this up.
Yeah, it's important to be clear about that.
So are we okay that it's still an option? Is that what I'm hearing?
No, I think you're hearing the opposite, right?
No?
No. The money that's being spent is being spent on this recommendation only.
With the added language of the site-specific SPOL.
Yes.
So we have to redo the motion or amend the motion.
Yeah. You need to vote on this motion. You'll vote this one down, if that's what the board so chooses.
You can, if somebody wants to move to amend the motion.
Yeah, that's
what. Second to amend the motion.
Okay, thank you.
And you can vote on it that way. So you need to have that action.
I'd like to amend the motion.
And I second it.
So the only, so I'll reread it. The administration recommends the Board of Education approve continued exploration of facility solution that supports full day kindergarten and removal of the remaining portables at Hadley, and engaging the community and the administration around a K-5 facility solution at Spalding, an early learning center facility solution at Spalding. Study a solution to support the removal of portables at Hadley, develop full-day kindergarten curriculum, and a cost limit of $10,000, not to exceed $10,000 without coming back to the board for approval. That is the new motion. May I have a motion for that, or a second, or whatever the heck we call it?
We're there.
We're there? Okay. Okay, any discussion on that?
Okay. I have one other piece that was brought up, and I just want to share it with you.
I knew we could.
So close.
We were close. We were good. We were close.
I just have to tell you this because I had an hour and a half conversation with her on the phone today, and I promised that I would share this. So I had put a call out last week, sometime in the end of the week, to Debbie Novak, who's the school board president at St. Petronel. Mm-hmm. And they have, in some ways, a very similar story to ours, although it's a much smaller cohort, obviously, to the size of the school. But they, in fact, are the only school within this diocese, along with visitation pairs, that don't have a full-day option, which is why a year ago, the principal that retired, Dr. Kelly, started this conversation because they saw they were losing children to other parochial schools that had that option. And so we had a very good conversation, and she, in fact, is going to visit some of the kindergarten programs that are around her, I think, that we've done. And, the other thing I just want to mention, because I thought this was good, is they're on trimesters, and so their parents can start with a half-a-day option, and then a conversation with the teachers. If they want to move to full day, then they can do that, and they have space to do that. But I thought, in some ways, our neighbors in right down the street are dealing with a lot of the same research stuff that we're doing. So that's why they are, are moving forward. It was a community call.
Okay. I'll just add that I think it's a mistake not to include our current facilities, but I will still support the motion, as I do believe that full-day kindergarten is something we should still explore, given all the data that we've learned about it. So, roll call.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes. Okay. Probably just be redundant on this, but just so that the communication is correct to the community, we have voted to explore options. We have not voted that we are going to provide full-day kindergarten yet, but we are exploring it, continue to explore it as we have done in the past. Superintendent's report.
Two things tonight. One, the five essential surveys, if we can continue to get more parents to fill that survey out, it really is critical, and there's space within each of the surveys for parents to add other information. But if we don't hit the 20% mark, we don't get any of the information back from the parents. At Lincoln, we're at 12%. Churchill, we're at 17%. Franklin, we're at 17%. Forest Glen, we're at 14, and Hadley, we're at 12. So it really is important information. They're asking tons of great questions on there. Again, there's place in there for other comments that can be made. So I would really ask our community or our parents to fill that piece out. We'll continue to push it out. Erica will continue to provide links for the five essential survey. We have it right on our webpage right there for parents to click on. And to complete that survey. The next piece tonight is speaking about multi-age. Karen and I have had, just this year alone, over 22 opportunities to meet with teachers across our district, from Hadley to Lincoln to Franklin. Across this district, we've met with every group of teachers. Any teacher who wanted to meet with us had an opportunity to sit down with us and have conversations. At each of these meetings, we invited the principals, the administration to join us and to listen in. We've had last year, through my recommendation, that we pause level, moving forward to level two literacy for this year. As we continue to go out and speak with our teachers, our principals about level three multi-age, we're hearing a lot of success stories. We're hearing a lot of good things out of our level three, from our students to our teachers to our principals. Principals really documenting that they're seeing less and less behavior issues. They're seeing more and more leadership issues for our students. Karen brought together all of the level three teachers, minus two teachers who were out sick that day. Great feedback. One of the teachers stood up at one of our CIT meetings and said, if you change level three multi-age, I will be looking for another district. This is something that has meant so much to her, to her kids. So really pleased with our level three multi-age and literacy. We keep having our conversations with our level two teachers. It's clear that they're not quite ready. We've spent a lot of time with our level two teachers, speaking with them about some of those struggles that they see and that they perceive around multi-age. So we've done, I haven't done a formal written survey, but I have gone out, Karen and I have gone out and really tried to listen to our teachers and see where they're at and what they need with this multi-age piece. So we are going to continue the pause in multi-age for the next 2 years. So we're going, that will not, multi-age will not be a part of our level two, level one, or any other discipline. So it's staying right at level three with literacy only. These next few years, we'll continue to monitor the data. We'll continue to have our conversations with our teachers and continue to see and watch that growth in level three as we continue to present, like Karen did earlier this evening, academic updates. As I said earlier in the evening, that'll be three times a year. We'll bring to the board a fall, winter, and spring data so the board can continue to monitor the programs and the progress of our kids. But as you saw tonight, our kids are doing well. Our kids are doing well here. They're doing well in Glenbard West. Now, can we, as John said, can we get better? I absolutely believe we can continue to get better in allowing every kid an opportunity to open whatever door they want. Even our students. We've got to allow our students, who are those outliers, at the top and at the bottom end, those same opportunities to continue pushing through those doors. Karen alluded to differentiation throughout our piece. That's an important aspect. When we look at our structure in which we're trying to create here in District 41 is giving our teachers those opportunities to differentiate, because you saw those box and whiskers for many of our teachers, there's a lot on their plate. There's a wide range of learning that is occurring within classrooms that you saw from a district perspective, but that's happening within each of those classrooms. So creating more opportunities for our teachers to come together and plan, more opportunities for our teachers to differentiate in the classroom, and giving every kid where they are at, from their point A to their point B. That has to be our goal. Every kid making that growth. Some of our kids, as you saw, need to continue to make 2 and 3 years growth in a short amount of time. Because we know through the data, kids aren't on grade level. Their opportunities to graduate and have incredible opportunities later really fall. They significantly fall apart. So we have it within us to continue to differentiate, continue to bring great instruction, continue to engage. I loved what Mr. Monahan from Glenbard West said tonight, around the rigor, around the problem-based learning, around creating engaging opportunities for our kids to have these opportunities. And I think that's what we're doing. But to summarize, we're holding level 3 literacy, multi-age, where it's at. We will not move it forward. We will hold that pause button for the next 2 years. We will continue with teacher specialization. We will loop our students in grades 2, 3, 4, 5 when possible. So that means if you have you're in a 4 section and you go up to 5 section, we're going to struggle with that looping. But we've seen the benefits, and our teachers were very, very clear with us. They want that looping to continue because they see the progress. They're able to start on day one, coming right back from summer break, and they know their students, and they're able to progress with them further and do even more things with them from a social, emotional, and an academic side of things. So that will be where we're heading in the next few years.
All right. Thank you. Anything else?
I think that's enough for tonight. Right. I mean, come tonight, baby. You got a lot.
Any board members that want to report out?
I've had a couple of meetings, and I want to make sure that I give a shout out to Heather because I was at their PTA meeting, and they have. I want to remind board members that starting now, we're rotating out to our next rotation. So that means that we're going to be moving out of where we are now and into our next grouping. So I do PTA Council. I think Catherine, you go to special education parents, you know, so just as a reminder for us to double check. I know, Nancy, you have the rotation for that if we need it. And you have that one, right? Or you do that one, right? So you did it. So anyway, know our next step. For Hadley, I just want to mention a couple of things. Mr. Bagley always attends the meetings, and so he gave a good report on some of the calendar issues, but then also what they're doing in terms of getting kids ready to go to high school, and it ties into what Mr. Monahan was saying. And they distributed also, and I think middle school parents, I'm just going to hold this up so you can see it. If you have this, this is the information, and it's actually called the Step Up, a Middle School Parents Event, Saturday, March 7th, yet another activity on the 7th in the morning at the College of DuPage, and it's about successfully transitioning to high school. So the high school is passing these out, and you should have copies of this, so it looks like some good information. The other thing I wanted to mention is at the LEND meeting the other morning, which is the Legislative Education Network of DuPage County, we had a presentation. Paul was there as well, and Jennifer Sabo, who's the Assistant General Counsel for ISBE, the Illinois State Board of Ed, came and presented on charter schools. It is her job. She has herself and then a 0.8 FTE, so it's not a very big department. But they're charged with really the overview of all the charter school questions in the state. And she gave a nice kind of heads up on what we're looking at. But the thing that I want to mention is that if you listen to Governor Browner's address, his budget address, and some of what's been coming out after that, and I know Len sends it to us, there is a real interest on his part to expand charter and vouchers, and so that has an impact on public schools. So I think it's something for us to keep an eye on, and Jennifer Stavis said she'd be willing to certainly come and present to boards if we had more information or needed more information around that.
Okay, great. Anything else?
No,
anyone else?
I attended on February 18th a special education parent support group meeting. Michelle Gallo and the assistant principals did a presentation that was spectacular as far as I was concerned because I learned a lot for special education information transition to kindergarten and to sixth grade to Hadley. And quite frankly, for myself, I learned a lot about Hadley for general ed and special ed. But it was very well done. It was question and answer session, and it was fairly well attended too. So,
thank you.
Anyone else?
We had a policy committee meeting, and we had it on the 20th. Yeah, exciting. We had it on the 20th from 9 until 11. Very vigorous debates, not really. I want to thank Nancy Moak because she prepared us phenomenally for it. She had all of Section 6, and that's one of our charges for this year. We thought it would take us a few months. We were able to get through most of it. It'll be back to you for first reading on the 9th. And do you want to add anything to...
Well, if I just tell people, I have the exact title here to say Section 6 instruction.
Yeah.
So it's dealing with, I guess I shouldn't generalize on instruction, but we took a number of recommendations from staff who deal very closely with instruction in terms of anything that we might want to modify in the policy. So.
Finance?
Finance. We had a finance meeting earlier today, and Mike presented his technology department budget, and we had the presentation on buildings and grounds budget as well. So those will be coming for the full board.
Excellent. Anyone else? Done?
No, not done.
Oh, I'm sorry. More policy.
No, it's not. It's not more policy. It's an announcement that I would like to make publicly to the board tonight that due to a personal situation in my family, I will be resigning my position on the Board of Education in the coming months. I expect to be submitting a letter to our secretary outlining the effective date in March, according to the board policy. And I want to thank each one of you for the real... privilege that you've given me to work with you in this organization over the last year, and I hope in the future I will be able to serve in another board because I found this experience to be quite rewarding. I'm really proud of this community and the commitment that it's made to the K-8 education for students in District 41, and from my experience and my perspective in the world of education, the kinds of problems that we are dealing with really show how well we are poised to educate our students. We are not in a survival mode. We are really in a thrive and excel mode, and I think that's a great place to be.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Any other big announcements?
That's enough for one night.
All right. Okay, upcoming meetings, March 9th, 2015, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m., Central Services Office. We'll be leaving the confines of Hadley. March 23rd, 2015, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m., Central Services Office. Any other matters to be considered by the board? Anyone?
John, if I could.
Absolutely.
I want to address the comment that came up in public participation earlier today, this evening with Mr. Cooper. And it was around a concern of the March 7th board coffee and conversation. It's certainly not in my, I think, personality to represent myself versus actually doing my board work and my role in the board. However, when we chose that meeting time, March 7th, it was to be able to follow immediately after the town hall, which is March 4th. And so it was to be able to have a couple board members available to give some answers and be open to giving information. My understanding is that we were the only two that were available that day. So I just want to clarify that. I do not view my role as using this meeting as anything other than my board service and what I currently am doing here. However, I will recuse myself from that to avoid any kind of concern or to continue the conversation. So if there is another board member who is willing to serve with Patrick or you're on your own, buddy.
What time is it again?
8:30 to 10 at the Glen Oak. Same restaurant we had it last night.
I don't agree with that decision. Every elected official, we have business to do, just like every senator, just like every governor, just like every president. They still have business to do, even in an election cycle. So it's a District 40, it's not a District 41, it's a Board of Education conversation that we were asked to have more direct insight and direct communication with the community without the administration present. Mm-hmm. I think you're an outstanding representative for the board and to bring a lot of history and insight to that conversation. So personally, I don't accept
your resignation from that.
She didn't resign.
For the public comment, I really thought it's a public venue. It's open to the public. Every candidate whose name is on the ballot is welcome at that coffee to participate as a citizen in this district.
Good point. So well, it looks like you're stuck.
I think we can request that you stay.
No, you don't have to.
Well, ultimately, it's your decision, and
yeah.
I mean, you have to do what you feel. I mean, you know, right? So,
I wanted to put that out there publicly and get it on the record. I heard the concern. I appreciate that concern. I know. I think you know me well enough to know that I'll do the job as board member and not as candidate. So, if the board's comfortable with that, then I will continue and I'll work with that.
Yes.
Okay.
The board is comfortable.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other matters? Okay, terrific. The board has determined a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees or representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees, the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal, sounds like a wrap, of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Second.
Board will not be taking action when it returns to open session. Thank you all for participating. Have a wonderful evening.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Wilkinson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Alter?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yeah.
Mr. Penn?
Yes. Open session. I'd like to welcome everyone to open session.
Motion.
And I'd like to close the open session. May I have a motion, please?
Motion.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you all. Have a wonderful day.